As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I'd like to start today's episode of Times Ours at a nice sort of right here kind of tone, if that's okay with both of you, my two co-hosts, Nate Taylor and Seth Kaiser. I'm Joshua Briscoe, and guys, let's please go ahead and keep it chill. Let's keep it down here. Do either one of you know why I feel like it's important to kind of start in this headspace for the beginning of today's podcast? Nate, why don't you hazard a guess?
Well, hello, Josh.
Hello, Nate. Hello, Nathaniel.
I'm wondering if it's to just, you know, make sure that you are handling everything in a professional, mature manner.
That's important, of course. But so Seth, I'll give you a hint here. Since I give Nate the first guess, I'll give you a second guess with a little hint. For me, this is really about something that I know is on people's minds in this week, in this episode, no less. Maybe even a person we're going to talk about that I want to keep everybody in a healthy, non-panicky headspace.
I don't know, but your voice is starting to freak me out. It makes me feel like finally understand when my wife tells me that whenever I'm like, hey, hon, I need you to do something for me, she like immediately assumes there's a spider the size of a cat on her shoulder or something.
Yeah.
And that's the vibe I'm getting. So I genuinely don't know why we're being so chill.
Okay, well, that's perfectly fine. Seth, if you could just take that sharp edge off of your tone right now, I would really appreciate it, just for the audience. Because for me, what I'm trying to do right now for everybody is I have to imagine that some people listen to this podcast, you know, late in the evening, maybe even shortly before bed. Maybe it's in the morning and you've just woken up. Whatever it is, I just know that based off of my mentions, seeing Chiefs Twitter and kind of just looking around ever since approximately halftime of Monday Night Football last week, Chiefs fans have gone to bed and then woken up in a cold sweat, having terrifying nightmares of Derrick Henry consuming everything and everyone they love in a terrible fire. And I just wanted to give everyone the opportunity to get back to a healthier headspace at the very beginning of this show, simply because I know you're all worried. I understand. This Titans team has Ryan Tannehill, two aliens to throw the football to, assuming they're healthy, and then just a literal bull, I think, or maybe a freight train. It's kind of up to you, back behind Tannehill. So if you're having a tough time right now, I understand it.
I kind of forgot that Derrick Henry exists, to be perfectly honest. I feel like that's disrespectful. He's a really good player.
You sound like a man that maybe didn't watch Monday Night Football this week. Fair?
No. He's a really, really good player. I think it's just been so ingrained in me to not worry about the run game, which I'm not saying is necessarily correct.
Yes!
I'm not saying I'm correct. But I think it's just hard for me to get quite as fired up there. I will say this. If the Chiefs allow certain types of things to happen, the thing that I think Derrick Henry does that makes him really dangerous is that he can both grind out those tough yards, But he also, he breaks big plays in places other running backs don't. And that's where you can have him affect the game more than other running backs, because those big plays that you don't always get in the run game, it's kind of like, you know, you talk about like a Jamaal Charles phenomenon, all those very different players. Jamaal Charles as a runner could compete with a lot of passing games, because I thought
because
of a way of describing
it was 6 yards per carry all the time.
I thought of a way of describing it with Charles is if he gained 4 yards on a run, you were disappointed.
Yeah.
With other running backs, it's like, oh, that's not bad. But with him, you were like, oh. Whereas like Henry is like, he really can break those big runs. And I would just say if the Chiefs give him opportunities to get some lanes, his breakaway speed, like, you know, he's not going to run a ridiculously fast 40, but I bet you in terms of like running like a 100-yard dash, he'd compete with a lot of dudes in the NFL and win because that top speed is crazy.
Can I ask for a little bit of an alteration to that race? Can we
Does he trample over corpses? Because
No. Can we do it with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter? I want you to play.
No, it's 6 minutes left in the fourth.
I want you to play 54 minutes, and then we break out the race.
Yeah, I think Hill and Hardman still beat him, and that might be it. Because and Mahomes, if Henry is chasing him, if Mahomes is being chased by Vita Vea, he has no chance. Someone tweeted that if Mahomes had been chased by John Ross at the combine, he would have run a 4.16 40. And it was the funniest thing I've ever read, because it's so true. Patrick Mahomes is just a little faster than whoever's chasing him. And it makes me wonder what it looks like if he goes jogging. Like, what if, like, someone on a bike comes on the path? Like, does he just morph into this freakish speed? Anyway,
you guys remember the movie The Incredibles?
I do.
You know how, spoiler alert for a movie that came out 15 years ago, maybe? Yeah. I'm just guessing.
Great movie.
At the end of a great movie. At the end, Dash has figured out how to enroll in school sports, even though he is literally superhumanly fast.
Yep.
And he does this race, and he gets so far ahead that his family is yelling, other superheroes, of course, yelling from the stands, yelling, no, slow down, slow down. And then he slows all the way down and everyone passes him, like, no, run, second place. And then he sprints up and wins second place. That is what Patrick Mahomes is doing, that sort of gear shifting.
Just depending on who's chasing him. It's like, oh no, you know, I'm being chased by a cornerback and the cornerback like falls down. Mahomes will slow down by like 5 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and
sure.
It's like, wait, how did that happen? And it's gotten to the point to where his trainer, Bobby Stroop, who does a great job with him with these scramble drills and stuff, but he's like taken to Twitter a few times, like, guys, he's athletic. Like, let's stop talking about him like he's not.
I will never stop. I will never stop. I know that he's incredibly athletic, and I will never stop pretending that he's not, because his running form is just very funny sometimes, and I love that.
Right.
Nate, I wanted to ask you about kind of how the Chiefs are preparing for Derrick Henry by mentioning one of my favorite moments from today's pressers, where one of our dear colleagues, I don't remember who it was, sorry, dear colleague, one of our dear colleagues, though, asked Steve Spagnuolo, says, you know, Spags, coach, whatever, I know number 22 is gonna cause a lot of problems, and Spags interrupted him and went, sorry, who's number 22? And then everyone took a second, and then everyone laughed, realizing that Spags was just straight up pretending not to know who Derrick Henry was, which is sort of, we talked about this last episode briefly, where you can disrespect your favorite people or people who are beyond being disrespected. And that's because if Spags said that about any other running back in football, it would be like kind of disrespectful. Today, he was obviously joking, because everyone knows that Derrick Henry is, again, literally runs like a bull.
Yeah. And I think our colleague was Peter Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride. And look, that's just two East Coast guys having an East Coast moment. But I get the sense that there's so much phrasing that coaches have to do to make it digestible and repeatable for players, so that they hear it over and over again, so that it becomes second nature, so that it becomes applicable on the field. And sometimes it's 22. Sometimes it's you got to stop the engine. You know, Tershawn Wharton says, you know, it's his legs. Take out the legs, like
kill the engine. It's even more violent.
Yes, even more violent. Wrap up. The way Spagnuolo says "wrap up" is great. But you know, you've heard so many phrases this week that it would be comically funny, like comical, if they gave up like 200 yards to this man, which would be understandable given how great he is. But it also demonstrates the idea of like packing your bag, going to the airport, getting to your hotel room, getting off the bus. No one's comfortable. Just, I can't tell our listeners enough. Trying to tackle that man in the fourth quarter is the equivalent of having to be a crazy person. Like, you have to be crazy to do it, and to do it well. And so that's sort of the you know, the just the mountain they're going to have to climb if this game is close in the fourth quarter and Derrick Henry is clearly a factor. It also should highlight just how wildly impressive the 2019 AFC Championship game was, because they were so great in the second half that the Titans tried and it just never worked. But this is a different defense than. So a lot of DBs are going to earn their paycheck. And if there was ever a game for the Chiefs, at least in the early portion of the season, to have all their defensive linemen healthy and effective, well, fellas, you've picked the right week, because it appears that we may have all healthy defensive linemen who are at least capable of getting in Derrick Henry's way.
I pulled up the AFC Championship game in 2019 before you even mentioned that, because I was curious what that final line was, because I remember writing a story in theathletic.com ahead of this game. And it's still true that you cannot and will not beat the Chiefs solely by running the football, even if you do it pretty effectively. In that game, Derrick Henry had 19 carries for 69 yards, which is a pretty nice performance. 3.6 yards per carry there. His longest run, this is probably the most impressive part of the whole group here, was for 13 yards. That is not what he did against Buffalo on Monday Night Football that has led to some haunting nightmares. And also now, obviously, it's not just A.J. Brown in Tennessee. It's Julio Jones as well, although both of those guys, I think, missed practice today along with Derrick Henry. So some stuff to keep an eye on there that will only be made evident as we, you know, keep an eye on everything tomorrow and the next couple of days. But the Titans are very interesting because they lost to the freaking Jets and then they beat the Bills. And they have, I mean, they had, like I said at the beginning, they've got basically three aliens, and then Ryan Tannehill in the middle just has to pilot the spaceship. It's a very interesting team offensively.
They are. I may or may not have taken a bite of hickory bacon jerky. You'd be done talking that soon.
Bacon jerky? Hold on, walk me through that. Because again, I'm on this whole, like, I'm just trying to eat a lot less carbs and have some good snack ideas.
Bacon jerky. Yeah, bacon jerky. It's good. It's exactly what you're thinking.
How sweet is it? Because my biggest issue is it just Jack Links here? I'm seeing some hickory smoked thick cut bacon jerky.
You want the maple flavored if you want a little sweetness added.
So I don't actually. What really turns me off of jerky sometimes is if it's too sweet.
Oh, kind of weird. Then yeah, you could get like, there's a variety of flavors. The bacon jerky itself, unless you get like the maple flavored, is not very sweet. It just tastes like bacon.
I mean, I do like that.
Yeah. No, it's literally exactly what you're envisioning. It's jerky that's bacon.
You want a brand name grind right now? Some generic? I'm open to whatever.
I'm on great value. I have five kids. Okay. And so I don't buy brand name stuff. I buy, if it says value on it, I'm in.
That's fine. I'm on Walmart's website right now. We can let Nate talk while you eat the jerky and I Google that jerky.
Well, I've finally swallowed. So here's the thing with the way Tennessee is built. They really are a unique team, and a lot of people talk about the fact that, you know, Henry was around before Tannehill came around, and he wasn't nearly as successful as he is now.
The Titans tried to trade him.
Right. And a lot of people, on Monday. a lot of people point to the idea that, well, that shows that Henry isn't the engine that drives that train. I would also note there's another possibility. Maybe Derrick Henry's better now than he was 4 years ago.
Sure.
I mean, that's one possibility. It's also, you maybe the running back can be the engine that drives the train if you have an above average quarterback, right? Hmm. Both things can be true, but a running back can't be the engine that drives it if they have a crap quarterback, which, well, that doesn't that mean the above average quarterback is kind of the impetus? Sure, but so is Derrick Henry. You take Henry off that team and you put an average running back, I do think their level of success changes significantly. And you see that every time Ryan Tannehill is not like throwing the ball against like guys with eight in the box or with play action humming, because Tannehill, he can throw the ball, he can sling it with the right situation and he's not under pressure. He can make some really good throws. He's like a Kirk Cousins in that sense. You know what I mean?
I don't think you can say that quarterback's name on this podcast.
I slandered that man last episode. You weren't here, Seth.
We're way past the point of return.
This is what happens when I'm not around.
How
many beefs does one guy need?
Ryan Tannehill is like if Kirk Cousins was athletic and confident and a good quarterback.
And science.
I think with Tannehill, so much of it is dependent on the situation being correct. And Henry allows that situation to be correct, as does the offensive line, as all those things. And that's why, like, as good as Tannehill's numbers have been over the last few years, similar with apparently the quarterback who shall not be named from Minnesota, he's had great statistical success, even like in-depth stats over multiple years that make you go, well, whatever. But it's just, there are certain times where you can, like, you know, obvious passing downs, that kind of stuff. You can kind of see where it's like, a little more situation dependent kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so they're an interesting team in that respect. I kind of hope that they get completely healthy because I want the Chiefs to kind of continue to sharpen themselves as much as possible. Although, you know what? No, not right now. Right now, I just want them to get dubs. They need They've had one awesome half of football, and that's not enough to make me say, oh, no, they're right. Because like that, so, and we'll talk about this more and more like as it goes on, but like that team that played the second half against Washington, when Kansas City plays that way, they are, in my opinion, not beatable. Like when the defense is playing well and their offense is playing well, they are not beatable. There's not no other team's best is going to be enough. It's just like they've done it for like a half and like one other quarter this season.
Right.
And so I want them to collect dubs. So I retract my previous statement.
And they did that against the worst team they've played this year. Like,
absolutely.
Probably by a lot, depending on how you feel about the Eagles. You think Washington's better than the Eagles? The Eagles seem a little frisky to me. I don't know, that just might be because I'm a little bit bullish on Jalen Hurts. I don't know.
It's a tough. I mean, we're splitting awful hairs here, but
we're splitting turds here.
But you know, Chris Jones. I just think there were turnovers in the Philadelphia game that could have been had that the Chiefs, for whatever reason, didn't get, that they didn't get in Washington. And I would also say, too, that, like, we talked about this in the last episode, Josh, but Washington made some field goal decisions that, hey, wisely, the Eagles were like, we'll go for it on fourth down and just, you know, sort of see where it is. Or at least they did it. They were more aggressive. So I would really compare those two teams similarly. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Chiefs' best win was against the Cleveland Browns, and have you seen their roster before tonight's game? We're recording this on Thursday afternoon. Wow, man. That team is literally broken on offense. Mostly based on body parts, not like systematically or anything of that nature. So if they, you know, this is kind of saying an obvious point, but like if they win Sunday, it would qualifies the best win of the season based on record, based on timing, based on the opponent beating a team that just drubbed you. It's, man, this season is so weird. I just want to say that.
So weird.
But that's where we are.
I'm screwing things up by being here.
No,
I can tell. But I mean, no, that's oh, by the way, hi everyone. Sorry I missed the last few. I'm sure Nate and Josh had a very professional podcast.
Very professional.
I mean, my,
if
again,
if your like, name is not Kirk Cousins.
I tweeted this out, and so I mean, it's true. Like, having you here, Seth, not having you here does mean 33% more of me and Nate, and that's such a blessed number for this podcast that I do think there's something there. I dropped the ball because I was pulling up the Titans injury report for today to see if it was out, and it is. AJ Brown has not practiced either Wednesday or today. Taylor Lewan seems unlikely to play. He has not practiced either of these days. I didn't actually see his apparent concussion. He's in the concussion protocol because I was sitting in my car that wouldn't start waiting for AAA, trying to figure out to get them there on Monday night. It was a whole ordeal, which is why I missed the beginning of that game. And Derrick Henry did not practice either of his last 2 days, but he's listed as not injury-related rest. And Julio Jones.
Tired.
Right, of course.
Holy crap, I got tired watching him.
Julio Jones was a limited participant today after not practicing yesterday. So there's your most important injury updates.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hasn't their defense been just atrocious all year? Like their secondary?
Yes.
Because so what I saw against the Bills is not like atypical.
No.
That's no.
Not, did no, you
not,
look,
not
look,
great, I, Bob.
I'll tell you what was even more egregious because it was early, ladies and gentlemen. It was September. It was sunny outside and very hot. And the Arizona Cardinals, who had no confidence in this season, they went up and down the field on those boys. And yeah. It was the most stunning surprise of opening day, just because I thought those were two teams that were similarly comparable, contenders, full-fledged contenders, but like probably not going to make it to like championship game or more. Mm. And then I don't care if they put all the secondary on DeAndre Hopkins. It did not matter. It did not matter. So, if we want to simplify this game, the moment the Buffalo Bills went forward on fourth and one mm-hmm. inside the 5-yard line, and the moment they didn't get it, my father, Michael Taylor, called me and was like, okay, that's good for us, right? Because Buffalo has now lost two games. There's still like a slight chance of the Chiefs catching Buffalo. And I was like, yes, that's true. And he was like, they can't cover anyone. And I said, right, Dad. And can the Chiefs tackle Derrick Henry? And then he said, yeah. So
what's the over-under in this game?
Who will do a better job? Will the Titans cover the Chiefs receivers, which could include more Josh Gordon, of course? Or will the Chiefs do a better job gang tackling Derrick Henry for all four quarters, knowing that the fourth quarter is the hardest time to do such?
I want to pivot into that straight into something that Seth wrote about with a couple of the new rotations from last week. But before we do that, I'm just sort of curious, are we all, because it sounds like we are. We didn't, you know, if people ever think we have like actual content-based show meetings before the show starts, you'd be solely disappointed. We talk before the show. It's never about the show. Are we all on the same page of essentially both offenses are going to get theirs at least a good portion of the time, and it'll come down to whichever defense is out of character, illy better at their job? Is that where we're all at right now?
I think so. I think turnovers are going to play a key role. I mean, it's been
great.
It's been a storyline all season for the Chiefs in a way that it just hasn't been in previous years, because the Chiefs have always been a team in the plus turnover margin. But I think probably whoever wins this game, it's a prerequisite, right? It's a requirement to get a turnover or two, to see if that gives you that much more of a chance to build your lead or to come back. Unless you're playing... I want to say his name wrong so bad. Unless you're playing Jalen Hurts or Taylor Heinicke.
You did it.
I just think you should expect shootouts from here on out.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts, he threw up, they had a billion yards.
A billion yards.
But I would just, I keep telling people, go back and watch that game and count the number of times that he just took the snap and immediately threw the ball to the sideline, and they gained 15 yards, or to a guy going across the line of scrimmage to the sideline, and it was 300 of his yards. So people are like, "Oh, he played really well." I was like, "Well, kind of." But anyway, I have a prediction for this game, and one half of football has got me just drunk with optimism, which is always stupid.
Dare to dream, Seth.
I think unless the Chiefs turn the ball over two or three times, I think Tennessee's going to need to score 40 to win this game. The Chiefs' offense looks really good, and we finally saw against Washington what happens when they don't turn the ball over. Because even with the Bills, you had drives that should have ended in points and didn't.
Yep.
Because of self-inflicted wounds and drops, and the Bills, they earned that win. They outplayed the Chiefs in every phase of the game. There's a reason everyone was totally all accurate, for sure, right? I don't think it's a coincidence the Bills came out flat the next week, because that was their Super Bowl so far. And it should be, right? The Chiefs they are the not the Patriots, because the Bills go back decades with the Patriots, but they're the guy. And they even admitted it, before the games, this is the team we're trying to beat. Everything we're doing is to beat these guys. And they did. So good on them. But the Chiefs offense, it remains, unless they get in their own way, they are unstoppable. There's not a team that has really done a good job stopping them. And I just, the turnovers can't continue forever, right?
Maybe. You would think.
One would imagine. But that one who imagines may not have watched the 2021 Kansas City Chiefs. It's gotten to the point now where I'm not surprised when dudes are dropping the ball or fumbling. I'm like, yeah, it sounds about right. I'm getting nervous in those moments. So we'll see. I would love to talk about Rashad Fenton and Juan Thornhill, if that's the direction we're going, or if we're going to talk about the fire-breathing dragon. I didn't know what direction you were going, Josh.
No, I want to stick with the defense, but first, I do have all of the over-unders from just this week of NFL games here, and I'd like you guys just stop me whenever you think we've found Chiefs-Titans, okay?
Gotcha.
42.5, 44, 47.5, 47, 49, 50.5, 42.5, 47.5, 48.5,
keep going.
43, 46.5, 40, 57.5.
There it is. Wow, one of these things does not belong here.
I mean, it is a stratosphere. It is a touchdown and a field goal above the second highest line of the week.
That is excuse me. That is mind-boggling and not super surprising. It is kind of funny though when you think about it, cuz prior to the Monday Night Football game, was the Titans offense considered that good?
I don't necessarily think that it was. I think that it was considered full of excellent players, but I do think that that game had to change it a decent amount.
Yeah. And, right. And it's fascinating, too. Like, again, where do you catch these teams at in your schedule, especially now that we're in week 7? As we said before, the Chiefs caught the Browns at their mint condition. They will play the Denver Broncos. And by the way, we should kind of hope Cleveland wins that game. They're playing the Denver Broncos in their worst physical condition. You know, as Seth said earlier, Buffalo was peaking at its most efficient manner against Kansas City. And so it was reasonable to have a dip. But this is where I always tell people, like, the difference between championship teams who've done it before and teams that are on the precipice appear to be ready to take that next step, like, those teams would win both of those games. And that was sort of the test I had for Buffalo. It's like, okay, go win both road games and really show how much you are ready to sort of take over the conference. It'd be nice for the Chiefs if the Titans played them the way they played the Jets, which was like disinterested on the road. And like the Jets really, really needed that game. The Jets kind of played out of their mind for their, you know, first year head coach. So, now the Titans are a team that I would assume is more fortified in their own abilities. They could say, hey, we got boat raced on opening day. We're further and further away from that. We did have some injuries. We did not take our opponent legitimately against the Jets. Those are our two losses. Like, all right, let's go win the division now in the horrid AFC South. But because of what Derrick Henry did on Monday night, and because it is a short week, it will be fascinating to know if the Titans can play at a high, high level the entire game, or if there's going to be dips in their play that the Chiefs can sort of take advantage from, as the Chiefs, we all three assume, are kind of, you know, rising out of a weird 6-game stretch where, at least for the second half, that's their best football of the season, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
So here's a fun fact about the Titans. They their offensive DVOA, which for those who haven't heard before, it's essentially a statistic that measures how good they are at moving the ball, right? Takes into account down and distance, that sort of thing. So it's a much better measurement than just pure yards per carry or yards per attempt or even points per game, right? Mm-hmm. And it also takes into account strength of opponent. The Titans are offensive DOA. They are 14th in the league. And that's after a win over Buffalo, who, because of how strong Buffalo's defensive DVOA was, that really propelled them. Before that game, they would have been like much lower. And so it's just interesting to me that people are looking at the Titans and saying, yeah, you know who's going to have a shootout? Derrick Henry or Ryan Tannehill. And maybe it's not like the Titans have never won shootouts. I mean, they beat the Chiefs in a really, really wild, weird shootout of a game with Mahomes playing really well in 2019. Of course, it required – go back and watch. If you ever think that Derrick Henry rushing for a bunch of yards was like the catalyst for that game with them winning, go back and watch the final 2 minutes. And remember that that was one of the weirdest games. That's like what got us started even more so on like this only weird game shtick, to be accurate. Because the things that happened on field goals for that game, they basically had a tell – with the special teams that they'd figured out in advance.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That allowed them to block one kick, another one. Yeah.
Right. And remember, Blake Bell was dealing with the ankle injury that they threw to on third down.
I remember that.
Still mad about that.
Which, by the way, Andy Reid acknowledged it this week, and I was like, wow, no one asked you this, coach. But even Andy Reid was like, yeah, man, that was bad. That was a mistake.
it's just interesting to me that how quickly things turn into all of this is going to be a shootout. But I mean, it might be. It's not any sort of disrespect to the Titans. I think they're a good team. But it's just interesting to see this expectation of a shootout. If I were the Titans, like you said, they got boat raced in week one. And since that time, I mean, I suppose the Bills really love to spread their offense out the way that the Cardinals do. Mm. And so maybe they found better ways to counteract that. But I feel as though the Chiefs could do some really bad things to that secondary.
Let's go with the Chiefs defense first here in terms of the pieces that you've written so far, Seth, cool. Because you went and took a closer look at both Rashad Fenton and Juan Thornhill. Mm-hmm. We can start with your film review and then we can talk a little bit about what Spags had to say about both of those guys today. Cause I'll be curious to see what you thought of that, Nate. I'll let you follow Seth up with that because I think something interesting happened there. But you took a closer look at both Fenton and Thornhill. They both got 100% of the snaps in this game.
Yep.
Obviously, Thornhill becoming the number two safety beside Tyrann Mathieu and jumping over Dan Sorensen. And then Fenton, really mostly, I think I would say, getting snaps from Mike Hughes, who still played some. I think DeAndre Baker barely played. But obviously, Charvarius Ward injured as well. Hopefully back this week. Where are you at right now on Fenton and Thornhill? What did you see when you broke it down?
All pros, baby. No, I'm sorry.
Hall of Famers tomorrow.
Yeah, Hall of Fame. It was really fun watching both of them because both of them addressed specific things that have been problematic for the defense. It's worth noting Fenton played a lot of snaps against the Bills too. So mm-hmm. It's not like he's like the end all be all. But I would just say, remember after the Bills game when we were like, did anyone play well? And we were like, you know what? Rashad Fenton did.
Yep.
Like, and he was it against mm-hmm. the Bills. It was like, there we got Fenton. You know, the uniforms looked all right, you know, stuff like that.
Harrison Butker made all his kicks.
Yeah, he did. You know what? Yep, we did mention honorary mention to Butker. The thing with Fenton, and we can talk about each of them. So I charted every snap for Fenton, and I looked at every snap for Thornhill and wrote about him on the Chief of the North newsletter, where you can still subscribe at bit.ly/SethReallyHatesMoney, which that deal might be going away sometime soon, so you might want to lock that in. Anyway, I'm considering it. We're closing in on the point to where that's gonna become a little more of a bigger gig for me.
So yeah, we'll just do that, and then you can buy name brand jerky.
Ooh, that would be getting fancy.
Finally, I finally found the way to motivate you to raise your prices.
Name brand jerky, Seth. Pay off your student loans. Yeah, but this name brand jerky.
Also, if you subscribe to the newsletter and the price goes up, it will not go up for you. That correct. I want to make that clear. It's if not going to hike on price, everybody.
Yes, if you lock in that price now, that those of you that have already subscribed, it's going to stay the same forever. That's my promise
to
you.
As long as you stay subscribed. I mean, if they unsubscribe, I mean, who's to say?
Yeah, if you unsubscribe, you can't resubscribe for the same price. That's ridiculous.
Absolutely not.
Come on. Actually, probably if you DM'd me, I'd probably be like, yeah, you made
stop
a mistake.
Stop it, Seth. Stop giving your stuff away for free.
Anyway.
I work in terrestrial radio as well, and I'm telling you to stop giving your stuff away for free. We literally broadcast ours over airwaves.
Which is, it's ironic. So with Fenton, you know, I looked at success, fails, neutral snaps, and coverage. And here's what I would say, the stuff that he added. We could go into the specific numbers, but he isn't an elite athlete, but he's got decent change of direction. He's got good feet. He doesn't take a lot of bad steps. He plays physical, and he's just a pest. He's hard for receivers to shake, and he's got just enough athleticism to generally stick with them down the field if he doesn't get beat at the line. He had a couple of situations with McLaurin where he was even, and then he wasn't, because that's just not how he plays, right? But he's able to generally pester guys, and he rarely, if ever, takes a bad step or anything like that. And so he adds a sense of not screwing up to the secondary. And that maybe seems like it's not enough of a compliment, but he makes good positive plays, contests the ball really well, and he's where he's supposed to be. And so I showed a few examples of just really simple, kind of just some zone looks where he's just doing his thing, right? Just zone coverage. You'd barely track it as a successful coverage because he's just doing what he's supposed to do. But with what they've had going on so far this year, just having a guy not blowing coverages is a big deal. And then you add a guy who's pretty sticky in man coverage, a guy who tackles well, contests passes well. He's an above average NFL cornerback who does his job. And this secondary desperately needed guys who do their jobs. And so that what he did is he removed a problem spot, because Mike Hughes has been getting picked on, right? And with terms of blown coverages, that's been a problem. So you remove a weak spot there, and defense is as much about avoiding weaknesses as having strengths. And that's why I'm hopeful that Fenton stays on the field a ton. Whether he should start over Ward, I don't know. Ward's played pretty competently his whole career. But if you get it to the point to where it's Snead, Fenton, and Ward, I'm comfortable with that trio.
Sorry, I was hoping Nate might just pick it up because the dog next door is having an absolute episode. Casually muting my microphone, just sitting here. With you on that trio, by the way. I feel good about that. Nate, what did you think whenever you saw that Fenton was getting the start against Washington, and then over the course of the game, plus what Seth just broke down?
Yeah, in terms of what Seth just said, I think that will be the plan moving forward. Because what makes it even more intriguing, I think, and you probably know this too, fellas, is if Tre'Davious Ward comes back and he's what we assume to be as healthy as he can be at this point in the season from a quad injury, and he's effective, then you can really move two corners around based on whatever the matchup is on the perimeter of the field. Fenton has, you know, as I said back in training camp, I got no concerns about Rashad Fenton. Rashad Fenton actually adds a level of trust to the defense, in my opinion. And again, this was way back in camp when I was like, I don't know why Rashad Fenton isn't getting more reps, but maybe it's because the coaching staff, much like I do, are just like, hey, we trust him. We kind of know where he is. He played very well in the postseason too when given his opportunity. So he can play in the slot or as the nickel if need to. Obviously, Snead has done both so far. And so if they want to give Snead more opportunities on the perimeter based on his length, that's fine. If they want to see what the matchup is from the opposing offense, that's totally fine too. But I think this is probably the trio moving forward. You can give a little bit more snaps to DeAndre Baker if you want to limit the exposure of Mike Hughes. But I think Rashad Fenton's in a stretch right now where he's just in a hot streak, and you want that to last as much as you can. And this will be an interesting test, because just when AJ Brown goes across the field, I don't know what you do. Like, it is very similar to Travis Kelce in a lot of ways, where it's just like, well, he's big, he's strong, he's incredibly fast, yards after contact, yards after reception. It's just and by the way, now add some play action element to it, get the linebackers to be solely focused on, you know, Derrick Henry. So this, you know, if Rashad Fenton plays really, really well in this game, with whatever snaps are going to be given to Tre'Davious Ward, because I don't think he'd play his normal amount coming back in his first game. I think they'll try to manage him along same way they've done with Frank Clark and Willie Gay. Then this secondary, as I sort of boldly predicted a few weeks ago, as I sort of said, like, don't care about the pass rush anymore. It is what it is. It's already gone. It's never coming back. What I thought I watched in June, smoke and mirrors, kids. The only way this defense can really improve is through their linebackers, most notably Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, and their secondary, because of what Seth sort of showed in the idea that, like, hey, there's not multiple openings for, again, take a deep breath, Taylor Heinicke to move the ball down the field 20 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Right. And that's the more subtle stuff when you get to Thornhill especially, and I suppose that's probably what we'll talk about next.
Seth, why don't you talk to me about Juan Thornhill, his performance in this game, what you saw from him on tape, and what he can offer to the defense going forward.
You know, you say
that. I'm Joshua Briscoe. I'm Zars Podcast.
You know, you say that sarcastically, but it sounds exactly like what our segments on 810 are like. So I don't know, man.
I'm not being sarcastic. I'm just doing an impression of a professional broadcaster.
Well, so in a way, I complimented you. You're so professional on 810.
Yeah, that's not really my brand.
So
this is home right here.
Yes, this is where we live. That's right. So with Thornhill, it's a little tougher because you can't just chart wins and losses in coverage. Fenton had a quantifiably good game because you can chart the wins and losses. Like, oh, only four real obvious losses, which is not bad for a corner. That's an incredibly hard position to play. With safety, with Thornhill, it's a little less about charting wins and losses and looking more at what does. And almost more importantly with a safety, and this is where it gets tough, it's hard to not lose people, what doesn't happen. So an easy example would be one of the very first play that I talk about with Thornhill is just a simple throw to the flat with a tight end coming across the line of scrimmage that gains 3 yards for the I almost called them by their old name, by the football team.
Woo!
I kind of like Washington football team. It's funny.
It's really sticking with me at this point.
Like, I'm kind of wondering why all teams don't do it. The Kansas City football team.
No. Yeah, that I was going to say that gives me more, you know, worldly soccer club vibes. Yeah. Here's my one opinion. They cannot change their name to something more fearsome, celebrated, unique, regional until they actually get good. They need to have a winning record before they change their name again. Because the Washington football team create a jersey, you know, homecoming beatdown opponent. It just looks nice. Every time I rewatch this game on the All 22, I'm like, it's really like they just created a team on Madden and just threw them into the league.
It is exactly like that. Well, they create countless things just out of thin air, like Hall of Fame tributes to legendary deceased players that they obviously threw together over the course of 2 days.
2 days.
I'm mad about that.
And they talk about us.
No, that made me genuinely upset because Sean Taylor deserved better than that.
Oh, of course.
But anyway, Thornhill. So the play that we're talking about here, it's just a 3 yard gain. It doesn't look like anything special until you really go back and watch the first, you know, 5 weeks of Chiefs play, 6 weeks of Chiefs play, and see how many of these quick little perimeter throws or quick dump offs to tight ends coming back across the line of scrimmage or rub routes or pick plays, however you want to say them. When you look at how successful they were, that you see this juxtaposition between watching with Thornhill out there and with Sorensen out there. And it's one of those examples of a half second difference in closing speed for a safety is an eternity. And that's the thing with him, is some of the plays that didn't happen because of closing speed. There was a third down that everyone kind of noticed more so, where he got into the backfield and they ended up having, I think they kicked a field goal or something, because they had a multiple yard loss. It was another quick sideline throw, like a wide receiver screen. And Thornhill was there, right? He technically made the tackle. It almost looked like he missed, but it's only because Heinicke made such a bad throw that it like jumped the receiver out of Thornhill's way. So you notice that. You see with deeper routes, passing lanes not being as open. And so quarterbacks on a couple of shot plays, and I left one for an example, the quarterback looking down the field on a shot play, seeing, hey, it's not there. He didn't bite on the fake. That's something Sorensen struggled with. And even less like quantifiable, but very, very real, is how often they were able to have him as the deep safety, which meant Tyrann Mathieu was in the intermediate or shallow areas of the field, where he's by far the best version of himself and can help the Chiefs in other ways that they've struggled this year. And so even just by existing, as dumb as that sounds, he was able to improve the defense as a whole. But I don't think it's any coincidence that that was, I think that was Tyrann Mathieu's best game. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
This is also, if anyone listening to any of that was having a hard time visualizing any of these various things, it's another, I just opened it back up again. The story, I mean, it's another reason to go actually watch along on this, or if you want to pause the podcast and then read through this and then pick it up again. A lot of the things that Seth is detailing, at least for me, make a lot more sense when I can see them. This is not, I know you're just talking about Thornhill, but there's one specific play with Rashad Fenton, just like dancing around in a zone
Yep.
that is The first time I watched it like 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
Because this isn't quite true, but he's kind of covering 3 dudes.
Absolutely. And that's the point of zone coverage. And it's hard to describe what that looks like, because what zone coverage well done creates is you've got these 3 guys that are pretty much all covered, but there might be a window there for a split second. And that's why, like, Mahomes dices up zone coverage, because he sees where it's going to be, and, you know, he's a mutant. But no, every time you watch that play, the reason I chose that one is because the same thing happened to me the first time I watched it. I was watching, and I kept noticing something new every time. I was like, wow, he really effectively took away that flat route. Well, wait, there was also a pocket shot there between him and, wait a minute, here's a crosser coming. And
he almost never, it looks like he takes at most like 3 steps in a direction before reevaluating. And one time he does go one direction for maybe 8 or 9 steps, but it's like there's a hesitation every time, but like a purposeful one. It just, it's really interesting. You should go read Seth's work.
You should subscribe, people. But anyway, so with Thornhill, it really is there's the more intangible thing. And I would just say this, Thornhill improves the free safety position by himself, but he also changes the way the Chiefs call the free safety position. Mm. And that makes them better. It makes Tyrann Mathieu better. Tyrann Mathieu is not as impactful a player when he's playing 25 yards off the line of scrimmage in a cover 2 constantly, or he's the single high safety. That's not where he's at his absolute best as a game changer. He's at his best closer to the line of scrimmage, whether it's as a robber or helping the run defense, because you got one more guy who's doing the right run fit. That stuff matters. And you don't get it as much with Sorensen on the field because they can't call the same stuff. So it's more than just Thornhill being a better player than Sorensen. Him being a different player than Sorensen makes the Chiefs defense overall better. Between him and Fenton, their impact is more than, like, it's not like the same, like, people are like, well, neither of them is like a superstar. It's not the same as if you added a superstar at either position. But their impact is larger than just the individual player. If that makes sense.
Yeah. What did you think whenever Spags talked about those guys today, Nate? Anything you'd add to any of that for the Chiefs going forward?
I put it on Twitter earlier. This is as far as criticism goes with Steve Spagnuolo, but he said that Dan Sorensen was in a little bit, quote, a little bit of a slump. So this is here for the duration, is what I take from that. I think that much of what you guys have mentioned before, Fenton is capable of doing everything at a competent level, which just opens up more for Steve Spagnuolo to do, especially in terms of not necessarily just disguising what the look will be, but obviously trusting that, hey, if I put you in an island, like you won't be Daniel Sorensen crisp. So I think the next step, and this is where it gets important, is that Chris Jones should play to some degree on Sunday with Frank Clark and not against a heavy option RPO offense in Baltimore that just, you know, made Chris Jones essentially a statue. Steve Spagnuolo also mentioned that maybe there's a chance that Chris Jones slides inside. But I would really put a lot of the onus, because of the upgrades in the secondary so far, because you've played all the young athletic linebackers that you have at your disposal. It would be nice if the Chiefs' defensive line played particularly well, and in addition to Mike Dana and Tershawn Wharton, like, collectively, because I don't feel like they've done that all season.
One last thing on the defense, because I want to spend a little bit of time on the offensive side, but you mentioned the young linebackers. You also tweeted out that Anthony Hitchens had his right arm in a sling during the portion of practice today. He has not practiced so far this week. Neither has Michael Burton, the fullback Tyreek Hill, or Joe Tooney. Obviously, Jody Fortson hasn't either. He's still on the active roster, but I'm guessing they're waiting till the end of the week to make that move so they can pick a position that they want to add someone else at, potentially linebacker. Tooney didn't practice last week either and didn't play, obviously. Same for Hill. I think he may have been a limited participant at some point. But But Hitchens was ruled out early in the game last week, and we got a lot of green dot talk today as well. Also, Spags, I didn't tweet this out because I don't. It could have easily been a slip of the tongue, but Spags did say the phrase "we'll miss him," I believe, about Anthony Hitchens when talking about the linebackers for this week.
Yes.
So it seems very unlikely that he would play, right?
Yes. Now something, I mean, when your arm's in a sling, it's unfortunate. By the way, if you're scorekeeping at home, the Chiefs said that he had an elbow injury during Sunday's game. He did not return. Made total sense because based on video, he seemed to be nursing his right elbow. Yesterday, Andy Reid said that Anthony Hitchens missed Wednesday's practice with a tricep contusion, and on Thursday, his entire right arm was in a sling. So I don't know how it really works, but it's gotten what appears to be worse each day since Sunday's game against Washington. So I can't anticipate Anthony Hitchens being a part of the game against Tennessee. I think the further question that the Chiefs are evaluating as we speak is, will he just miss Sunday's game, or in the current NFL that we live within, should we put him on the shelf as a short-term injured reserve candidate for 3 weeks? And they've done this with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, of course, to give him plenty of time to return healthy. That was sort of the thought process there. They have not chosen to do that with Chris Jones because he's missed two games. If he misses Sunday, then you have a level to criticize. You have a reason to criticize the Chiefs training staff and decision makers on that. With Anthony Hitchens, I'm not sure how reasonable it is to ask a guy with his arm in a sling to start tackling people again in less than 3 weeks, if that makes sense.
And more importantly, to tackle someone who's not a person, but is in fact a bull, as I will continue to stick with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tough assignment there.
It's a lot to ask. So I would say remove Anthony Hitchens from the game plan for this week.
It'll be an interesting thing seeing them adapt to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they've said you have to declare. Spags said today you have to declare three potential signal callers. I'm guessing they'll give them all three to the top three linebackers. Sounds like Neiman will probably handle most of that, but like there was a snap at least, or before Hitchens got hurt, where Bolton and Gay were the two linebackers on the field last week. So at least one of those guys will have to have one of those helmets, and they have to literally switch helmets because you only have one green dot on the field at a time. Got a little green dot education today, which was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Let's go offense here, because we have spent the majority of this podcast this year talking about the Chiefs defense, which I don't feel bad about necessarily, but it isn't as fun as the offense is. Again, the turnovers are pretty clearly the thing. And I just also looked at the clock, Seth, realizing that you wanted to be done by now, but I'm going to ask you to talk about your article in just a second. So there's your thing to stick around from, but anything, Nate, I've got one thing on the offense that I want to talk about. I want to give you a chance to talk about what you want to talk about. And then Seth, we can have you close us down with your fire breathing dragon talk.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this is the same thing that you're going to mention, Josh or Seth, but like, in terms of explaining how this offense is operating right now, I just looked up some stats. It kind of is the framework of my next story that's going to be in The Athletic. It will probably be out by the time you hear this. The Chiefs have been ruthless on third down when they don't turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just read these stats and just let the stats speak for themselves. The Chiefs have had 68 plays on third down, which is not the most in the league, by the way, which tells you like how good they are in general. For instance, the Tennessee Titans, who run the ball a lot, they've had 80 attempts on third down so far. So in 68 attempts for the Chiefs, they've converted 60% of the time.
Good Lord.
41 first downs on 68. Well, I should say 41 first downs and or touchdowns in 68 plays where that's all the defense is trying to get to. We just want to get to third down. We just want to get off the field. And the Chiefs are converting at a league-leading rate that feels wholly unsustainable. But at least for 6 weeks of the season, it is at a historic rate. The next best team, you want to guess what their percentage is, fellas?
Tell me the Chiefs' percentage again.
60.3%.
I've messed up this guessing game many times, so I'm going to go ahead and say the second closest team is probably like... I'm going to say 60.9%.
Seth?
I mean, even converting 50% of your third downs is excellent. So correct. I guess 50%.
Ding, 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 sir. The Buffalo Bills, with 82 third down attempts, have converted 41%, or 41 times for 50%. So let's just say it, fellas. The Chiefs' offense is better than the Buffalo Bills' offense. Let's just say it. Let's just say it right now, even though, you know, offenses don't technically play one another. But
right.
The Chiefs' offense, when they don't turn the ball over, is just lighting people up. And part of that is Patrick Mahomes has two guys to target on third down, their names being Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and no team has yet to figure out how to really stop them at a high level. So this game, if you want to keep the ball out of Derrick Henry's hands, like I'm talking not super informed, then keep converting on third down.
Yeah. My quick thing is on the offensive line. People saw obviously that Mike Rimmers got the start on Sunday. Several signs that he will be starting this Sunday as well. The first one is that he talked to us yesterday, which is not something that a random backup would do, or even a guy just after one quick start. He mentioned that he was entering year 10, and that got the wheels turning for me yesterday. I went and checked on this to make sure it was right, and it is. It's just a fun, bonkers stat. Orlando Brown Jr. is in year 4. Joe Tooney is in year 6. Obviously, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith are rookies. So in terms of accrued full seasons of experience, Mike Rimmers entered this year with 9 years of NFL experience. The rest of the offensive line entered with a total of 8 years of NFL experience, which just cannot happen very often, I would have to imagine, and is kind of a funny little quirk in the numbers that shows the dichotomy of what this offensive line is right now. But also, I got to ask Bienemy today about having Rimmers there, and it, to me, sounds very much like a purposeful and definitely, at least for now, permanent change. Bienemy talked about how it'll benefit Trey Smith, how Rimmers can do the job there and will help communicate, and makes me think that was something that maybe wasn't ideal with Niang. And Bienemy said it'll be good for Niang to sit back and watch Rimmers, and I would assume also to some extent Orlando Brown Jr. do that job. I know that it would have been better for the long haul for the Chiefs to end up having a fully young right three guys there in terms of having just three rookies all playing side by side by side. But ultimately, I think they must trust Rimmers in that spot.
I think so. I think they've always trusted Rimmers, and they should. He played pretty well last season, and then that got overshadowed by a horrific Super Bowl appearance.
Yep.
Rimmers' competence is a reason why I didn't expect him to win. I didn't expect Niang to win a starting job.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think you can see when Niang plays, you can see the higher level of athleticism there. Mm-hmm. The increased bendiness, for lack of a better term. But Niang, and I don't think, here's something that's interesting to me, and this is where it becomes so hard to keep a competent veteran off the field. I don't think Niang was bad. Mm-hmm. I think he was inconsistent, and he had a few bad games. Like, or bad snaps, I would say. I mean, he was the weak link on the line.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't necessarily playing bad. I think it's just tough when Smith and especially Creed Humphrey, who I would argue, I mean, Tooney makes it tough, but I'd argue Humphrey might be the guy who's played the best along the line of everyone. Tooney makes that tough because he's a machine.
Yeah, and one argument there, Seth, is in terms of a rookie having to understand what each team is putting on tape and not putting on tape and adjusting to that. And understanding, too, and it may help Creed in this aspect. By the way, guys, no one's blitzing the Chiefs anymore.
It's just over.
It's a statistical phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Would you like to know how many drop back passes Patrick Mahomes has had this year?
Sure.
It's 247.
Okay.
The opponents, all six of them combined, have blitzed less than 13% of those drop backs.
Good.
It leads the league in the lead. Patrick Mahomes is the least blitzed quarterback by a mile.
Well, and that's, I mean, because it just doesn't work.
Right.
And it is kind of funny, like, what a copycat league it is and how they try to, like, even catch on to narratives almost. It's like, well, the way to beat him is to not blitz him. No. A way to be less sure of being beat is to not blitz him. If you blitz him, it's pretty much over.
Yes.
Most of the time. Unless, again, you're Bob Sutton with the Falcons with nothing to lose. In a weird
game. And dudes are playing for jobs. Oh.
Yep, and you are calling plays that you've literally never called before. I'll never forget talking to a couple of guys who are much smarter than I am. They're like, I've never even seen some of those blitzes. Like, and I mean, like, what do you mean? Like, this year? They're like, no, like, ever. At any level of football. Like, I don't know what they were doing. But anyway... and so they don't get blitzed much. And so basically they understand that they need to have the strongest possible pass protecting group. Remmers right now is a better pass protecting tackle than Niang.
Yes.
Might not be quite as good a run blocker. Mm-hmm. Niang's been a very strong run blocker on a lot of snaps. But he is just more consistent snap by snap. And they also, I think, probably, you mentioned they talked about Trey Smith. I think they recognize that they've got a potential star tandem or trio on the interior. And so you do everything you can develop that. Some of Niang's stuff, in my opinion, is more mental than physical. And I think he will benefit from the fact that he got to play. He got to see the live bullets. He got to see what it's like. And now maybe he takes some time, maybe it's the rest of the year, maybe it's a month or two, or, you know, a few games, who knows, and sees how a guy who is not as physically talented as he is has stayed in the league for 10 years.
And who does that sound like?
It sounds like Mike Remmers.
And?
Mitch Schwartz.
There you go.
Yep. And so I think that's the right move. It surprised me. I'm not surprised. Like, it could have been, they mentioned, well, there was like a hamstring thing. Maybe there was, but it's also a way to let him, like, hey, you know, we think he's been doing all right. He had a little injury. Mike played well. We're going to let Mike keep playing for a bit. I think it's a testament, though, to the fact that Niang, I don't think, was playing that badly. Mm-hmm. And they pulled him, I think, in part, maybe because of a little bit of an injury, but also because they could, because they had a perfectly competent right tackle sitting there. And I appreciate that they made that move, because this line looks really good. And I think it's only going to keep getting better.
Do we want to give out predictions and then let Seth read us out? I kind of like that. I kind of like that summary, if that works for you guys.
I think you'll like this readout. I think you'll like it as a closing. Nate, I know you're our closer, but I think you'll like it.
No, go
ahead. I think it sends us into a brick wall. Give me a prediction of how you guys are feeling real quick. One sentence.
Chiefs by 4 in a very high scoring game.
I think I said 35-31 earlier today. So with Chiefs, I feel like I should pick against the Chiefs. I'm 500 picking the Chiefs this year because they're 500. But I think that you're right.
Hmm. Chiefs by a touchdown.
Ooh.
Okay, Seth. I'm gonna come back here down to this voice. This is this being read now. The poetry corner. A snippet of an article that you can read at the Chief in the North newsletter at mnchiefsfan.substack.com, written and read and narrated. Which means the same thing here, by the author, Seth Kaiser. Seth, take it away.
Thank you. Good evening. I wrote after the Bills game that an era felt like it had come to an end. An era of optimism and expecting things to end in the Chiefs' favor. Mm. What I hadn't thought of about at that time, and what was perhaps hidden from me in the heat of the moment, is that no matter how much individual games, or even series of games, might go back to feeling like the same old Chiefs, one thing remains quite true. When you have the best player in the world, things are never going to actually be the same that they were before he arrived.
Snap him out, Nate. Let's snap out of the show. Snap, everybody. Great stuff.
For my football soul.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.